From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoen. You often hear the word closure. I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Nancy Burns writes in the preface to her new book, Closure, that she has known grief and loss. In 2001, her son was stillborn. She says that she was grateful for all the support and kindness she received, but the most hurtful words were, "Someday this will just be a memory." That set her on a path to explore grief and the popularizing of the idea of closure. Her book is subtitled The Rush to End Grief and What It Costs Us. Nancy Burns is an associate professor of sociology at Drake University. She joins us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Ames. And Nancy Burns, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. It's great to be on your show.
Nice to have you with us. And I'm sorry about your son. And you begin your book with a description of your grief and your loss, and also the fact that these words, "someday this will just be a memory," were so hurtful. Can you explain why they were?
Yes. It's hurtful because, although I think the person who said that, as well as other people who share words like that, really have good intentions.
Right.
They want someone to feel better. But it's hurtful because you lose something. In this case, I lost my son, and that's something precious to you. So it's not something you want to forget. It's not something you even want to just have as a memory. So when you're there in the middle of the grief, what you want to do is hang on to what little you have. And so that idea of it'll just be a memory was hurtful, in the same way that closure as a concept can be hurtful to people.
And is this the incident that got you thinking about closure?
It definitely got me thinking more about loss and grief and how, as a culture, we think about that and how we understand it. I also became interested in closure as I was doing research on the death penalty debate and how closure was used in an argument for that.
And it seems like a term and a phrase that has become more popular, and by that I mean more popularly used. How would you define what closure means?
Yeah, great question, Marty. Well, there's no agreed upon answer for what closure means, and that is why it can be useful for politics as well as a lot of marketing. Closure is used in a lot of different ways, such as to mean justice, peace, healing, or acceptance, but it's also used to talk about forgetting or remembering or even getting revenge. So although these definitions or these interpretations vary, the most common idea of closure is some satisfying end to a traumatic event.
And do you think closure doesn't exist, or it just doesn't exist in the way that we talk about it?
Well, it's a tricky question because it depends on how people define closure. So if they define closure in a way that they feel they can find that, it might exist. So, for example, if someone is going through a murder trial, and for them closure would mean the end of that trial, the end of it, then they might find that closure. But for a lot of people, they're defining closure to mean the end of the grief, the end of the pain. That doesn't exist because grief will continue.
Well, even going back to your own loss when your child was stillborn, and I'm sure now 10 years later, that experience of what you lost is different. Am I right?
Yes, it is different. And when I say that grief will continue, it doesn't mean that it's the same intense pain that grief is often those first few months, in some cases the first year or two. But grief will stay with people, and they remember that loss in different ways as you continue to go through life. So in a case of losing a child, you see other children at that age, and you think about, you know, what you've lost. Or if you think about children who lose a parent, maybe they lost a parent when they were children, but when they graduate from high school, their parent's not there. When they get married, their parent's not there. So there are different ways that loss will continue, but people also want that person and those memories and that love in their life. So it's not a bad thing. That will continue.
And is that in part what you were reacting to, which is that you want the memory of your child?
Right. And I felt, and still do, that I'm still a mother to that child. And so it was more, for me personally, a matter of figuring out, how are you a mother to a child that has died?
And when you think about closure as it applies to a loss or even a death, are you also questioning the fact that people go through periods of loss and mourning, and sometimes it looks like a kind of a roadmap to closure? Are you also questioning that?
I'm questioning when other people will tell others there's a certain way to grieve, and that in our society, we have sped up the expectations for how long people are going to grieve. It used to be that there's sort of a common expectation that it might take a couple years to really get back to functioning normal. And then it was back to 1 year. And now a lot of the expectations are as short as 6 months or 2 months. So we see this being sped up, and closure is part of that, because it's a popular idea that in order to grieve right, you need closure. And that doesn't do a good job of explaining the grieving experience.
In fact, you even talk about the DSM, that and perhaps that's what you were referring to, that the time of bereavement has been compressed from several years to now several months.
Exactly, yes. The DSM is shortening that time in terms of how long since someone has died when we consider it maybe they're pathological.
Oh, the idea that there's something wrong with them if they continue to grieve for somebody or something?
Right. And as I talk about enclosure, the rush to end grief costs us, and it costs us on several levels. So one of the ways it costs us is that if people believe they need closure in order to heal, but they cannot find what they are told is closure, they may feel something is wrong with them. And so I want to, you know, let people know that they don't need closure to learn how to live with loss. There are other ways that the narrative of closure costs us. One is that it distorts our understanding of grief. So this also makes it harder to have other people support us, because if they, in very good intentions, believe that you need to move on and move on quickly, then that's not particularly helpful. And then finally, the idea of closure is used to sell products and services and politics. So our expectations for how to grieve are shaped in part by how people are selling closure for profit.
And I want to get to all of that, but it sounds like you're saying that you can grieve and also feel joy and happiness in your life.
Absolutely. I think that when people understand they can carry joy and grief together, and that these are complicated emotions, that is helpful. You don't have to have a tidy ending to grief, and that's not going to happen for most people. But you don't have to close up all that pain before you can be happy again and enjoy some moments in your life, even if you're carrying some of that pain yet.
This idea of closure, though, it interestingly goes back to Gestalt psychology, as you write in this book, as a kind of perceptual idea. Can you talk about that and then talk about how you think it's kind of migrated into a more psychological idea?
Sure. Yeah, closure is a concept that has an interesting past, I think. As you mentioned, it was used in Gestalt psychology with the sense that your brain can make things appear to come together even if everything is not there. And then it's been used in some other disciplines in very disparate ways. But closure, as it's used in popular culture, doesn't necessarily reflect that exactly. So closure has been used, again, it's fluid and it means different things. So politicians and people selling products can use it however they want. So it doesn't have the same kind of meaning as what we saw in the research.
Well, let me just pick up on that. And President Obama, after the killing of Osama bin Laden, he went to the World Trade Center to the memorial, and in part to say, as his press secretary said, that this is a way to help bring closure to September 11th. Are you saying that politicizes that event almost, what, a little more than 10 years ago now?
I wouldn't say that event as much politicizes. However, in using the bin Laden example, one of the ways that I felt that you could see closure being used politically were groups that were criticizing the administration for not releasing the photos of bin Laden's dead body. And in part, what they were trying to say was people need to see these photos to get closure. But they were using that argument as a way of criticizing someone else's politics. And so what I would want to say is it's fine if you want to criticize politics or particular decisions, but leave closure out of it, because you can't promise closure and grief to those who lost people in 9/11.
So thinking about those individuals who lost family members that day, they may or may not have closure about this event.
Right. Most of the voices that you would hear or read about that were trying to argue against this idea that bin Laden's death brought closure mm-hmm. were family members who lost people. Now, that's not to say there aren't some people who say, yeah, I felt closure. But a lot of them would say maybe it's justice. Maybe they felt some justice, or maybe they felt some relief, but it wasn't closure. And part of that distinction is that for them, what they may hear when people say closure is an end to their pain, an end to their grief. And that's not what they're experiencing. And for some of them, that the news about bin Laden dying brought back a lot of memories, and so it's actually much more painful.
Well, and what gets tricky here is that when there are these public, you know, national, sometimes even international events, and leaders try to acknowledge something that has happened. I'm thinking of the Challenger. I'm thinking of other events where a president or a world leader wants to acknowledge what has happened. I'm not sure they necessarily want to bring closure or not. But oftentimes that's when we begin to hear that word, that if someone important says something about an event like this, that helps us all sort of mourn and grieve the loss.
Right. And it's also part of journalism, or part of how people tell stories, particularly mm-hmm. in the United States, I think. It's the idea that we want to wrap up things nice and tidy. And so if there's something that happened for an event or a tragedy that makes it seem like here's the ending to our story, let's go ahead and talk about it that way. And so closure's become a shorthand way of talking about that. It's frequently this one-word description mm-hmm. that, you know, people are supposed to find the end of grieving. So it's used by journalists and by politicians, but not always, again, being how victims would understand it.
And the idea is that closure is saying to victims or family members that it's time to bring an end to your grief and it's time to move on. Is that the either implied or explicit message?
Right. That would be one of the primary ways that people who are grieving might interpret what that means. And people also want, you know, others to continue remembering their loved ones. So there's a bit of concern, you know, if they feel like they're talking about closure, meaning they're going to stop talking about the lives that they lost.
The idea that the closure means we're not going to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, it could be interpreted that way. And again, it's not the only definition for closure. It doesn't necessarily mean that's, you know, when people use closure, that's what they mean. And that's one of the confusing things about it, is that when people use the concept of closure, you're not quite sure what they mean by it.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Nancy Burns is our guest today on the show. She's an associate professor of sociology at Drake University. In fact, joins us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Ames, Iowa. And she's the author of a new book published by Temple University Press called Closure, The Rush to End Grief and What It Costs Us. We're talking about her own experience with loss and grief, but also how closure, this notion of closure, has been oversold in some cases, misused in other cases. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. What does closure mean to you? Give us a call, 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
How does where you are influence what you do? The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY and presents Here, an exhibition that looks at how the work of contemporary artists is saturated with the experience of where they live. On view October 22nd through December 31st, Here showcases the work of 24 artists and artist collectives from 6 different regions of the country. For details, 215-972-7600 or PAFA.org.
I'm Marty Moscowane, and we're in the middle of the fall membership campaign here at WHYY when we remind you about the important role you play keeping WHYY and public radio strong. We get half of our funding from you. So pick up the phone and call 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. In this hour, we're putting closure under the spotlight. What does it really mean? How did it become such a well-worn phrase? 1-888-345-9499. Thanks.
Widener University supports WHYY. At Widener University, graduate courses are taught with leadership experiences in an educational environment. In addition to academic programs, Widener stresses the real-world leadership skills employers want today. Widener delivers the means for professional advancement and personal growth students seek in a graduate program, while accommodating work schedules through a variety of graduate degrees including hospitality and tourism, business, engineering, and more. Widener Leadership Works.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about closure, a word we often hear when there's been a national or tragedy or as an expression of private grief. And it can signal the end of suffering, a way to move on from loss and tragedy. Our guest, Nancy Burns, is a sociologist and says the concept of closure has been oversold and in some cases exploited. She's the author of a new book called Closure, The Rush to End Grief and What It Costs. She's an associate professor of sociology at Drake University in Iowa. And we do have calls coming in to 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Nancy, at the end of your book, you talk about being at a memorial service and walking up to the podium and trying to find those words that you think would be helpful for people at a memorial service. And I'm curious about what you said to them.
Right. And, you know, unfortunately, we've had several students at my university die in the past couple of years. Mm. And it's always a difficult thing to watch students and family members as they're grieving the loss of a young life and such a vibrant life that has so much ahead of them.
Indeed.
So at that particular service, and then just recently with another loss, when I thought about, you know, what can I say to my students? What could I say to the parents? And I think for anyone who's in that situation where they're trying to reach out to someone who's lost a person, it's hard to find the right words. And so what I said is there are no right words. I don't know how you feel. I didn't know what it was like to lose a son at that age. And so I'm sorry, and I don't know what to say. Those two phrases, I think, are pretty powerful because they acknowledge the loss that someone had, but they don't try and minimize the loss, or they don't try and take away the pain or explain why it happened. They're just trying to be with people at that time. The other thing I tried to say was that people grieve differently. They're not going to grieve on the same time schedule. Their grief will not look the same. And so we need to be patient with each other. Otherwise, there can be a lot of conflict in wondering why someone's not grieving the way they are. And that, as we mentioned before, that they can carry joy and grief together so that they can find laughter again even before, you know, all that pain goes away. And again, that's going to be on a different time schedule
sure.
for people, but that's possible and that's hopeful. And so when I talk about that closure doesn't exist, I don't mean that to be a loss of hope. That's actually meant to give people freedom and more hope to understand that there's no rush, that they can take their time, and that grieving's important.
Well, you also say, and I understand this in many ways, is that the desire for closure or even offering somebody this notion of closure is to impose some kind of order or consistency. I mean, it's to say that life, you know, has a kind of predictableness to it when, of course, we know that it doesn't.
Right. And we live in a culture that has this sense of fast, you know, to get something efficiently and fast and end it. And so we live our lives that way, but in grief and loss, it's not tidy. It's often messy and it can last a long time. So closure is this concept that it's like people are handing someone a box to say, here, put all your emotions in this box and then put it on the shelf. And that's not the way grief works.
Let me get, looks like Mark from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Mark, go ahead, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Well, this concept of closure, I don't know, I have a particular take on it, due to the fact, in part, that in 2005, my son was murdered while working for SEPTA here in Philadelphia.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
And, well, of course, being a parent that's lost a child, you become a member of a club that's so exclusive they don't even have a name for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that this idea of closure through that event and other events is generally something that is brought forth by those on the outside to make them feel better in the hope that you, the survivor of, you know, whatever tragedy or trauma it is, will feel better yourself. But in general, I would have to say that closure is nothing but mirage in the desert of our grief. It sort of, yes, people may wish it for you, but it's not really something out there, sort of like telling your kids that Santa Claus is coming on the 25th of December.
Mark, I
understand that people are doing this well-intentioned.
Right.
But it is, the whole concept is something that just falls so far short of its intended mark.
Well, you know, and Nancy, Mark said a very interesting thing, which is that he feels that it's people on the outside, maybe well-intentioned, but trying to impose this kind of closure on people on the inside, as you said, people like himself who are part of this you know, club of family members that have lost someone to murder.
Right, and thank you for your call, Mark, and I'm sorry about your son. Mm-hmm. It's such a difficult loss. And he has an important insight. And I hear and read about a lot of people who will say the same thing, is that they're not seeking closure, but they have other people telling them that that's what they need or that's what they should seek or how they can find it. And again, this is part of why closure distorts our understanding of the grieving process. And it can hurt the support we have around us. So some people who are grieving privately may shut down and not talk about their grief because they know other people think they should have closure. But what's going on is they continue to grieve, but it may be private. Mm-hmm. And then those around them don't see that, and they may think, oh, you know, Mark has closure now, but he doesn't. And so that pain is taken more privately. And I think people also, they resonate or they're interested in this idea of closure, particularly when it's someone else's grief, because we're uncomfortable around it. And it can be really hard to walk with somebody for years who's mourning the loss of a son or the loss of a parent or a spouse. And it's not that you need everyone in your life to support you for years, but if you had one or two people who understood that this lasts a long time, that can be really helpful.
Mark, I appreciate your call to Radio Times and underscoring what Nancy said. Of course, very sorry for your loss. And also just underscoring Nancy, what he said, which is that he feels as if by offering someone closure as an outsider, it comforts us to think that they would have closure when for him, it's really it's not an experience. It's meaningful in any way.
Right. It's a false hope, and it is part that we want someone to be comforted quickly. And I think that to understand grief, it doesn't have to be as scary. No one wants to have the grief in their life. But we lose people, and we mourn the lives, and everybody's going to grieve at some point. And so if we have a better understanding of what that grief might be like, and we can help each other through it, and not be afraid, you know, to be there and to hear somebody, you know, talk about the pain or to watch them cry, that's okay. We don't have to be in such a rush to try and get them through that.
Let me see what Abby, whoops, is that Brian? Let me see what Brian from Haddonfield has to say. And Brian, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. This
you're
is
welcome.
A really, really great show, and
thank
has
so
a lot
much.
Of meaning for me. And I want to say that your producers have just had very sensitive treatment, and I'm very grateful for that as well.
Oh, I appreciate that, Brian. Thanks. My
brother was an FBI agent who was shot and killed in Washington, D.C., and ever since then I've heard, you know, people talk about closure, and every time I hear it, it really kind of upsets me because it sort of feels like people say, get over it, just get past it, move on to something else, it's done. And the fact is, I love my brother. I loved him then, I still love him now, even though he's not with us. And I just feel really that closure is a bogus concept that we need. The way I get up in the morning is I work on gun violence prevention. But everybody's got a different way of getting up in the morning, and you don't lose these. You lose your feeling for the people involved, and that's a really critical thing. And this program is very sensitive to that, and I really appreciate it.
Well, Brian, I really appreciate your call to Radio Times, and you raise another very sensitive issue. And of course, we all feel sorry for your loss. And let me give Nancy Burns a chance to weigh in as well. Nancy, go ahead.
Right. Thank you for your call, Brian. And I'm sorry that you lost your brother. And what you said is so important. I couldn't say it better. And that, you know, we want to remember the people that we loved, and we do remember them. And I think that one of the the sad things about people using this concept of closure to try and tell other people how to grieve is that in many cases people mean well, you know, when they're trying to encourage someone to find closure. And if we can help people to understand there are more helpful ways to talk about it, and that closure for a lot of people is hurtful and it is painful, that would actually open up and help us talk about the grief. And so that's one of the reasons, you know, we have these conversations, and I hope that those conversations will continue and that Brian, in turn, can help, you know, share that with people.
And Brian, I appreciate you sharing that with us today on Radio Times. And again, sociologist Nancy Burns is our guest. We are talking about Closure. That's the title of her new book, and it's subtitled The Rush to End Grief and What It Costs Us. She is a sociologist at Drake University, and we have just a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. Nancy, what I hear you saying to our listeners is, I'm sorry.
Right.
And that's enough.
Yeah, it's enough when you don't have a lot of time to spend with people. You know, if your acquaintances, or in this case, you know, I'm not going to be able to have a longer conversation with Brian or Mark or other callers. And part of what people want is to have that pain and loss acknowledged, because that's remembering a life that was lost.
You also write about those roadside memorials, and we have all seen them. But interestingly, that's a way of remembering somebody as opposed to forgetting them. Can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. Roadside memorials, it's an interesting issue, because for some people, they want to remember that sacred space where their loved one died, and they want to set up a memorial to remember. And every time they go by, they want to be able to see that. But it's a conflict for others who don't want to remember it. Mm-hmm. It could be that they knew the person but don't want to remember that place. Or it may be that there are people who are driving to work and to the grocery store and they don't want to see all the memorials. They don't want to be reminded of the death and that this could happen to them too. So there's this conflict in terms of how people are trying to manage their emotions and grief. And the roadside memorials, mm-hmm. you know, make that a difficult challenge. And it's also an issue of, you know, freedom of expression versus, you know, if that's state property or private property.
And they're often homemade, which gives them even more power, it seems to me.
Right. They're homemade. They often have, you know, personal items there that meant something to the person who died. You know, maybe a hat, maybe a stuffed animal, pictures. And it is something that a lot of people might do together. And over time, it could be that one or two people keep it up if they're allowed to, if they have permission, wherever that site is.
Let me get, looks like Abby from Lafayette Hill to join us on Radio Times. And Abby, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. It sounds like you're speaking about kind of a commodification of grief or making it into a neat little package. And I'm wondering why you feel there's been an increase in the capitalist, I guess, influence on grief.
Interesting. Nancy Burns, go ahead.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Abby. You're right. There is a commodification of closure in particular. And I think that the reason we're seeing increase is that it's an effective way to market products. It's not easy to market some products, such as if you think about different funeral services, the service of embalming, if you're trying to market autopsies or wrongful death lawsuits. These are all things that people use closure in order to sell those. So rather than talking about the actual products or services, the salespeople can talk about closure, which resonates emotionally for people, and it's something that they want. However, it's not something that can be guaranteed, and it's not something you're going to find with any one product or political action.
And the idea of a product, a service, a casket, I mean, this is all designed, as you say, to bring about closure.
Right. That's just the marketing behind it. And again, because it's difficult to sell the actual products and the actual services, you know, it's difficult to describe, mm-hmm. then closure is a nicer, it's a more comfortable way of being able to sell what you're doing.
I wonder, too, and I mean, Oprah's not on the air anymore, but there are the Dr. Phils of the world. And these are, of course, TV personalities who often deal with people's loss and grief. Do you see them selling closure as well?
It'll depend on the person and the program. People who might I say, more professional. Mm-hmm. You know, professionals who are working with those who are grieving, counselors, you know, they also understand the experience of grief and are much less likely to talk about closure as a goal. In fact, they might warn people about the myth of closure. But we see in our popular media, whether talk shows or whether it's our, you know, crime shows on TV, closure has become an important part of that as well. And again, it's a nice way to wrap up stories. And that is why a lot of producers, a lot of journalists, and talk show hosts might do that. But I wouldn't say all of them would use it.
But the idea is that you can kind of come to a neat conclusion using the notion of closure?
Right. In some other research I did, I talked to editors of popular magazines, and one of the things that they talked about was they didn't want a downer, that when they're talking about difficult topics, you know, whether it's death or domestic violence or abuse, they don't want to have a downer. And so you think about, how do you write about these difficult, painful topics without it being a downer? Well, one way is to have a positive ending. Hmm. Closure, that concept of closure, gives it this tidy, neat Hollywood ending, but it doesn't reflect how we actually grieve. But that's also a sad part, because how we actually grieve, it's not all bad, you know, to understand it and then to be able to see how other people are grieving and then maybe, you know, have a better expectation what you might go through.
You also say that the victims' rights movement is also use this notion of closure. How does that work?
Well, in the 1980s and early 1990s, closure began to be a part of some of the court narratives. It started before they actually used that term of closure, but it was, you know, what do victims of crime need? And the crime victims movement then changed a lot of legislation, where now we're focusing on victims a lot more in decisions, whether it's death penalty or other particular court decisions. DNA collection is another topic that is gaining momentum in terms of also using this concept of closure.
But I'm also thinking about a courtroom, and I guess the idea that a victim has the opportunity to express something to someone who is on trial. Do you see that as part of closure? Because I could also see how that would be very healing to be able to address somebody who's hurt you.
Right. And that's where it's the concept of closure that's a problem in terms as a language. It depends on how that particular victim would define closure. Mm-hmm. So it might be easier to talk about, is this a healing event for them? Because closure can be so loaded. But if that individual is defining closure in a narrow way to think about, I want to say, you know, how this murder hurt me, and I want to express that, and they get to do that, and if they define that as closure, then mm-hmm. that might exist for them. But research is showing that victims, particularly victims of those who were murdered, now the family members often called co-victims, they don't, you know, think that closure is going to happen. And they understand that. And yet we have prosecutors and death penalty advocates who will continue using closure as a promise.
Let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation and our callers. Just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. Nancy Burns is our guest today on Radio Times. We're talking about her new book. It's called Closure, The Rush to End Grief and What It Costs Us. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Philadelphia Theater Company supports WHYY and welcomes Oscar nominee Haley Joel Osment and Broadway veteran Stephen Rao in the Tony Award-winning Red. Red is a portrait of master abstract expressionist Mark Rothko, who has just landed the biggest commission in the history of the art world, and his young assistant as they work feverishly to create a definitive work of art. Tickets for Red, starting October 14th, are available at 215-985-0420 or philadelphiatheatercompany.org.
I'm Marty Moscowain, and we're in the middle of the fall membership campaign here at WHYY when we remind you about the important role you play keeping WHYY and public radio strong. We get half of our funding from you. So pick up the phone and call 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. In this hour, we're putting closure under the spotlight. What does it really mean? How did it become such a well-worn phrase? 1-888-345-9499. Thanks.
Germantown Academy in Fort Washington supports WHYY. With over 250 years of history and innovation, GA provides a foundation for students to become independent, confident, creative, compassionate, and honorable. Offering a pre-K through 12th grade co-ed curriculum, GA proudly introduces their new middle and upper school buildings, nature preserve, and athletic fields. An open house will take place on Thursday, October 20th at 8:30 a.m. Details at germantownacademy.net.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And if you're just joining us, Nancy Burns is our guest. She's an associate professor of sociology at Drake University, and she's the author of a new book, which we are talking about, called Closure, The Rush to End Grief and What It Costs Us. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Nancy, we got a lot of callers that want to talk to you. Let me get Anne-Marie from Bluebell to join our conversation. And Anne-Marie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this excellent show. I can't wait to get this book.
Great.
I'm calling to ask how what your guest thinks about how our rituals of grieving collude in this idea that it's a quick process. We have, you know, a funeral or memorial service, and then you're supposed to be done. And in the past, there are other cultures, and even our own culture, there was a time when for a year, someone who lost a spouse might wear a black armband, or the Jewish tradition has rituals that kind of imply the expectation that you'll continue to remember and grieve by having, on the anniversary of the death, there is a service or a prayer that someone says, and that it gives the community a way to focus their anxiety about what to do with the ongoing loss, because you can support people for more time than just through the funeral. I mean, it gives a certain structure to that.
Well, that's
and how might that affect us, or how might
sure.
that help us?
Well, Anne-Marie, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. That's something we touched on. Nancy Burns, you want to expand on that a bit?
Sure. Thank you, Anne-Marie. You have insightful comments there. Rituals are important for understanding what we do after death, or what we do for grieving, and it helps a community understand that. And so if you have strong cultural or religious or family rituals, then you know what to expect and you know what to do. Well, you know what to expect to a point, but you're not trying to maybe recreate all the rituals that you need. What we have in the United States is increasingly fewer of those rituals and the strength of them for a lot of people. So if you do not have a strong religious or family tradition to follow, then people might search elsewhere to decide, what is it that we do? You know, when we're grieving, what do we do after death? So some then turn to the consumer culture for choosing these rituals, which, as we talked about before, there are a lot of people who are happy to step up and say, I have the products for you, I have the services for you. So rituals are important, and it's not a matter, we wouldn't want everyone to have to follow one set of rituals, but if you had something in your family or your faith or in your culture, that can be very helpful.
Well, and you can create your own rituals.
Right, you can create your own. It's helpful if you know them before you're suffering a great loss. So if you're, you know, in your family, if you can talk about death and dying and grief and what that means and what you would like to do, it can be helpful to know that before you actually need those rituals.
Let me read an email from Julie from San Diego. She said, what is a polite and concise way to explain to someone that the concept and the word closure are not helpful to a grieving person? Can you answer her question, Nancy?
Yeah, Julie, that's a great question. I think it would depend on the person and if you know them and how long you would maybe have to explain and how much you want to disclose about your grief. But you can simply say that I'm not interested in closure, and maybe explain why, or you can say, you know, closure is a concept that I find hurtful and this is why. And I think it's that kind of honest communication that would be helpful, because again, the person saying it may mean well, and then they would be educated and maybe think, you know, twice about saying that to someone else. So we really need to start those conversations.
Anne-Marie, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And I guess what complicates it, Nancy, is that it's so hard for us to talk about death or loss or grief. I mean, these are difficult subjects to discuss.
It is hard. And part of it is a lot of people try and avoid the topic. They try to avoid talking about death and thinking about dying. And so when you're facing other people's grief and their loss, that's a reminder to you that not only that you'll die sometime, but your loved ones may die. And so this is part of why it's so uncomfortable, because we're not used to thinking about that as much. And I think that once you start having those conversations, it becomes a little bit easier. It's not easy, but people become more comfortable with that.
Let me get, looks like Eileen from the Northeast to join us on Radio Times. Eileen, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Marty. Hello, Nancy. My story goes back to 1963 when my older sister was killed. And to me, the idea of closure is, you know, it's a catchword today. But from my viewpoint, I think at the time something like this happens, people need to be kind of educated in what to expect, what's normal, what's not normal, in your reaction to some that kind of death and things like that. I'm 40-some years later, I'm telling you there is no such thing as closure.
I hear you. And Eileen, we're hearing this from a number of our callers who have been through similar experiences as you have. Let me give Nancy Burns a chance to weigh in on this as well. Nancy, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Eileen, for your call. And I'm sorry for the loss of your sister, and I understand that you would continue carrying that grief. And I think that the question of, you know, what? How do we know what's normal, what's not normal? This is a tricky thing to talk about, because we have psychiatrists who continue to try and define what is normal grieving, what is abnormal grieving. But what that does is it is making grief a disorder, an illness, and it's something that we need to cure and to end. And a better way of understanding grief is that this is a part of your life, and that you're going to learn how to integrate that loss into your life. That doesn't mean it ends or that it goes away. You learn how to heal and how to live with the loss. On the other hand, so I don't want to just think this is normal, this is abnormal grief, because people grieve so differently. But there is that sense that people have. They want to know, am I okay? Is the way I'm grieving okay? And a lot of times people might go to a counselor or to a clergy member, and what they really want to know most is, am I grieving okay? And if that counselor or that clergy member can say, you're fine, there's so many different ways to grieve, a lot of times that can take the pressure off of them. And part of that pressure is this expectation that you move on quickly and that you get back to the way things were before. But in a lot of these deep losses, there is no the way it was before. Everything has changed. And so you're relearning what life is like. But that's okay. You can do that, and you're not going to be alone in that process.
Eileen, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Nancy, as you were talking, I was thinking there's an old graveyard. I often go and will walk my dog there. And for years, there has been a man. He's there every time I go, and he is communing with one of the gravestones there. It looks like it might be his son. And for years, I have seen him there as he's just sort of hovering over this gravestone. And on the one hand, it is so painful to see a man who's so clearly in such kind of pain. But on the other hand, he feels, obviously, just this need to be there with what appears to be a child.
Yes, that is a very poignant image. And I think that other people probably would have those, you know, observations or those personal experiences. And for some, going to the cemetery might be that place where they feel connected to the loved one who died. And that might be the special time that they have to continue a bond. And so people go to visit graveyards for different reasons. But it's one more example of how that grief and that loss will carry on.
Let me get, looks like Paige from California to join our conversation. And Paige, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
In addition to having lost my eldest brother to a jet crash back 15 years ago, something that I'm involved in is the local county sheriff's search and recovery dive team, where we attempt to find the drowning victims. And whenever we pull a victim out of the water, we usually have family members who are around waiting to see, you know, if there is a recovery. And what I am hearing on the show, or what I'm not hearing, is the difference between, or the separation between, grieving and closure. Because I feel that when we are able to bring up a drowning victim, I know that this will add to the closure, But as a personal, you know, having been through it myself, I know that the grieving goes on for years.
Well, and Paige, did you do this before you lost your brother?
No, I started it about 8 years ago. So about 7 years after, I thought, you know, this is something that I could donate to the community as my time.
Let me give Nancy Burns a chance to weigh in on that. Paige, I appreciate the call. Nancy, I guess the difference between grieving and closure?
Right. Thank you, Paige, and thank you for the work you're doing helping victims in that situation. That must be difficult. I think that to understand the difference between closure and grieving, again, you go back to understanding it's language, it's rhetoric. So how we interpret words makes a difference in terms of what we understand about that. From my perspective, closure is a rhetorical concept that people have used to try and describe something you're supposed to have after grief, and it doesn't exist. It's rhetorical. If it helps people understand what they're going through, you know, I'm not going to try and take that away from them, but my concern is that it puts a lot of pressure on people, and it makes people upset, and it hurts. There's a lot of anger. Grieving is a response that we have to a loss. And so the grieving looks different for different people, and it changes over time. So it can be very intense for a while, depending on the loss. And people may grieve the rest of their lives, but that doesn't mean it's something that impacts them every day, all the time.
Paige, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Dave from Fox Chase has to say. And Dave, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling for two reasons. One is I'm a pastor, and this conversation has been very, very helpful and very supportive, in fact, because I know that people grieve as they grieve, and grief may come upon them at any time for years and years and years. So thank you for having this out this way.
But you're welcome.
I'm most concerned because the idea of closure has been used politically, as you've mentioned, particularly in support of the death penalty, and that the marketing of closure has moved our society into a morally very difficult and ambiguous place. So that you know, we use closure to justify something that for many of us is unjustifiable.
Well, Dave, let me give Nancy Burns a chance to weigh in on this. It's something she writes about in the book. Nancy, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. The closure has been used in the death penalty politics, and just quickly I'll say that it has changed how many people are focusing on the death penalty. So rather than focusing on issues of innocence or questions of competency in terms of the legal counsel or racial discrimination, the idea of closure shifts all that to the attention on the victims' families. Now, I'm not saying that the victims' families don't deserve attention. They definitely do. But we need to understand how that politically changes the debate. It also, and I think this is part of what Dave is talking about, it also is telling people if closure, an execution will bring closure, what that is saying is that further vengeance and further death will bring you healing. But that's not what people experience. Maybe they'll want to talk about it as justice. That's kind of a different argument. But closure in terms of healing, research does not hold up in terms of showing that vengeance is going to bring healing. In fact, it often does the opposite. It can make people hurt more and bring more anger and more pain.
Dave, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
Hi, I'm Dave Davies here with Susan Greenbaum here. Asking you to support Radio Times and the terrific programs that you hear year in, year out, day in, day out here on WHYY. You know the drill. You know how we pay for this service. We come to you three times a year and ask you to do a simple thing. It will make you feel great. That is to call 1-888-345-9499. Make your pledge of support or do it online easily at WHYY.org. You know, Susan, these are short fundraising breaks we do at Radio Times because we want to respect the integrity of an interesting conversation like the one we've been listening to. And so we get in and we get out, and we hope that those of you, this special community who really appreciate Marty and what she does, will respond by making that call. If we do this quickly, we can continue to do this in a nice, concise way and let the show go on.
That's true, Dave. But I have to say one thing as we're sitting here listening to this conversation. I've worked with Marty for a long time, and one of the things that consistently kind of blows me away is how willing she is and how capable she is in having the hard conversations. This isn't an easy topic to talk about. We've just been talking about closure and grief. It's emotional. It's psychological. It drills down deep into the psyche of people. And I'm totally blown away by how capable she is with conversations like this. And we always tell our guests, when you come to Radio Times, you're in good hands. Marty's so capable. I have a feeling this is why you listen to our shows, whether we're talking about politics or music or theater, or we're talking with an author, or we're talking about some complicated psychological issue. You depend on Marty to be honest and thorough. We're hoping you will take a moment to show us what we bring to your lives by making a contribution, becoming a member of WHYY. That number is 1-888-345-9499. You can also pledge online at whyy.org. And she really is a gift. You don't hear this on radio elsewhere. Do you agree?
Yeah, and you can also tell by listening, because the person you hear on the air is the person that Marty is. She is one of the nicest people you will meet.
Big heart.
And she will really appreciate it if you, in the middle of a fun drive, when things can get a little slow, step up and take that step. You say, yes, this is really worth it. 1-888-345-9499 or WHYY.org. And I'm just going to add one point to what Susan said about Marty's terrific skill at dealing with difficult subjects. She's always emotionally connected and smart. And that is, her guests are also the right people. And that's where Susan Greenbaum and the other producers do a terrific job day in and day out of finding people who have interesting and original things to say on something as widely discussed as grieving and closure. And the final piece of it is the callers. Amazing callers to this program, people with relevant experience and thoughtful questions. That's because they're part of a community of people who knows what's unique about Radio Times, and they appreciate it. They call in. They believe in it. I think you believe in it. That's why you're here, and that's why for this very short break, we're going to ask you to step up and make that call. We have volunteers standing by right now for the Philly Roller Girls and some other folks. They'll answer your call quickly, and you will feel terrific.